I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
You don't see anybody talking about sharing the gains that all the billions of dollars that have been brought to the game. And they shouldn't, because they're the owners. It's what owners do. So you don't privatize the gains and socialize the losses. And when we're in these kind of environments where there's a difficulty that is a restraint, an issue, that is something that ownership takes the good and the bad with gains and losses, and that's really how ownership works.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is, of course, Scott Morris. Great line. You don't privatize the game and socialize the losses. Pretty fascinating. We are delighted to welcome in David Schwartz, longtime baseball agent, president of DS Baseball. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, David.
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate talking to you. What's your gut feeling? What do you think? Where is this at? Did the proposals that ownership made just on the idea of security, of protection from COVID-19, did that work for you? Do you think there's more things to be resolved, or was the 67-page report enough to kind of intrigue people about return?
Well, I think that baseball's coming back. I don't know exactly when or how. I don't think anybody does yet. I think that there are still a lot of issues to work out from a health and safety standpoint. But my best guess is that those issues will get worked out, because most of the players I've been in contact with want to play. I think most of the clubs want to play. I think the fans want people to play. And, you know, while there will likely be some amount of risk to anybody venturing out into the world, particularly without masks and in close contact with other people, I think that there is great momentum to try to get this done from a health and safety standpoint. And so my expectation is that, you know, the two sides will find a way to come together to start playing baseball, hopefully, you know, from the beginning of July, but the timeline still is up in the air too.
If we are able to, you know, clear those hurdles with the health and safety issues that are contained within the 67-page document, and it becomes a contract negotiation, essentially, David, what do you think are the greatest challenges in the language in the offer or the proposal from the owners? Because it seems from reports, and you might have more access to information and talking to people, but the shift from the prorated salary to the 50-50 revenue split is where I think the impasse seems to be most challenging.
You know, well, the misconception out there is that the owners have put forth a proposal that calls for a 50-50 revenue split, which they have not. I mean, as far as I know, and I am not part of the collective bargaining. I'm only getting reports as other agents and as players do from the union. There hasn't been an economic proposal yet from the league. They have floated various concepts through leaks to the media, but there has not been a concrete proposal from the league to the players. So there really isn't anything to comment on right now except for rumors. There is a chance that this gets bogged down in an economic battle. The union, you know, I've been an agent for 21 years. And from long before that, there has been great resistance from the players to anything that looks like a salary cap. And, you know, I don't think that a straight split of revenue is ever going to fly. I mean, there are other ways to have a negotiation about, you know, how to balance the financial hit that everybody is taking this year. But I'm not sure some kind of revenue sharing strategy is the way that that's going to get done. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, until we see what their proposal looks like, it's really hard to comment on what it's going to be. You know, the players are already making, you know, cents on the dollar because of the shortened season. I realize that the owners are taking a hit too, but, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of shared sacrifice here to get the product back on the field.
I find it fascinating that the number one idea, if ownership goes the route that they're talking about going, is almost demanding a certain amount of trust, which might not exist, right? Revenue has improved, I think, for 17 straight years, and yet it seems like some certain free agent stuff has stopped over the last couple of years. So there's already a level of mistrust. And then if you're talking about revenue splitting without showing the books, I don't know how you determine what revenue is split and what isn't.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, there isn't much trust because, you know, if you go back to the strike in the mid-90s, I mean, you know, there have been it's been a very good era since then. It was particularly good when Mike Weiner, the late leader of the players union, was in charge. He had a very good relationship with the league, and he was a wonderful guy, and his passing came too soon. But there isn't a well of trust that's been built up over the years. And I don't think the owners have any interest in showing their books. I mean, you know, no one cries for the players who, you know, even at the minimum salary, make far more money than the average American does. But the owners, I mean, there's no surer bet in baseball than owning a baseball club because, you know, franchise values continue to go up. You have intertwined with most teams TV revenue, you know, that a lot of the clubs now own their own broadcast stations. So, you know, when they float the idea, which is ludicrous to me, that, you know, every game they stage in an empty stadium will cost them $600,000+, it just can't be true. And I, you know, I can't imagine the owners opening the kimono enough to show the players exactly where all their revenue comes from, because, you know, teams have been crying poor forever, and I don't think anybody believes them anymore when they talk about their losses and how difficult it is to make a profit, even annually, as a baseball club. So you're 100% right. There isn't that well of trust that has been built up over time that would cause the players to just take the owners at their word. And I don't think the owners have any interest in showing exactly what their books look like.
Talking with longtime agent David Schwartz, and David, along those lines, one of those stories that you referred to was leaked or floated, included some numbers about how $4 billion in lost revenue is what is anticipated, how 39% of the gate receipts account for that revenue, and other numbers that I would imagine, you know, you have to take at face value, I suppose. There's a level of trust involved in even accepting those numbers as in the way that they are reported. Are you skeptical of numbers such as those? And is that part of the reason why there's such a desire to maybe have them open the books?
For sure. You know, assuming that they're going to go with the revenue sharing proposal at all, I mean, there really isn't any trust. I mean, the players would have to understand exactly what the revenue looks like. I mean, I don't think there's anybody at the union or among the players or among the leadership of the players that would just simply say, okay, you know, they said it, it must be true. So, you know, there will need to be a lot of verification. And part of it is, I don't think that process would be a quick one. I mean, everybody is trying to race to get protocols in place so the players can get back on the field. And if you're talking about completely changing the economics of the relationship between the players and the clubs, I don't know that that happens real quickly, because there will be a lot of financial information that people will have to sift through. And, you know, as we've been talking about now for a few minutes, that trust isn't there to just say, okay, we're going to take the ownership at their word. And I don't think the ownership has any interest in really sharing with the players exactly what local broadcast revenue means to them, because they've taken pains over the years to keep that secret, to keep that separate, to keep the activities around the stadium that the owners own secret from the players. So I don't know that the ownership even wants to open that can of worms. I think they will come looking for additional concessions from the players. And keep in mind that, you know, if they play 81 games, every player is now making half of what he thought he was going to make going into the season. And, you know, I realize the owners are airing half as many games, but there is going to be shared sacrifice here no matter what. It's up to the two sides to figure out exactly where to draw that line and how to move forward.
David, what is it that the players want from your point of view, from the people you've talked to? What is it that they want assured?
From a health and safety standpoint?
Well, either way, is that the number one thing, is health and safety? Is it making sure that the risk economically is worth it? What is it that is kind of the top priority?
You know, I think that the top priority has got to be health and safety. I mean, you have players with families, and, you know, they're going to be, you know, with their wives and with their children. And I don't think anybody wants to put themselves in a position where they might contract the virus and spread it to maybe more vulnerable people in their families. And so that is definitely priority one. The players I've talked to, and I, you know, I have not spoken to anybody who's part of the negotiations, so I don't know exactly what they're thinking, but, you know, rank and file players haven't really focused on the economic issues. I think that they realize that they're making less money this year than they thought they were going to make in March when this started. It's true they've already taken a hit because they're not getting paid, or they're getting paid a little bit, you know, through a fund that the union and the league established. But, you know, they're all going to make, you know, significantly less money than they had anticipated. But I'm not sure that the money is what's driving the players right now. I think they're trying to stay in shape, get ready to play, and they're worried about whether they're going to be able to do it and how they're going to be able to do it. And I think most players kind of, for good or bad, trust that, you know, the leadership on their side and the other side will figure out the economic issues. So I'm not sure, particularly in the absence of any concrete proposal, what that's going to mean. I mean, even when you talk about a 50-50 revenue split, nobody has any idea what that's going to mean in terms of how much an average ball player is going to make. I mean, we don't have any information about that right now.
So as we kind of anticipate the return of baseball, and everybody's anxious for this and eager for this, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, David. What is the biggest misconception out there in terms of having people assume certain things because they are so enthusiastic and they do want baseball back in such a way that they're assuming something they maybe shouldn't?
Well, I don't know what the biggest misconception is. I mean, it's been kind of amusing to watch and listen to media over the past couple months when there's so little to write about and talk about in terms of actual sporting events. So the speculation machine is ramped up even more than it normally is. I mean, you guys have seen, I'm sure, all the various proposals or thoughts that have been floated out there over the last, you know, couple months about, you know, perhaps playing games only in Arizona or only in Florida or in Arizona and Florida. You know, ideas, I'm not sure where any of them emanated, but, you know, some of them were kind of taken very seriously, even though it was clear they didn't have much chance of ever becoming reality. You know, the idea of quarantining players in Arizona where they weren't going to be allowed to see their families, you know, was laughable because that was never going to happen. It's funny, you know, I've been with my family now for 2 months, and the idea of taking a little break from them sounds good, but no one's going to say for 3 months, I'm not going to see my wife and kids. I mean, it's just, and that was a proposal that lasted many news cycles, but nobody checked with the players to see if that was ever going to fly, which of course it wasn't. So I don't know what the biggest misconception is, but there's just been a lot of speculation out there, which is fine. I mean, I think the players have been engaging in it too. The bottom line, I think, is players want to play. And, you know, people think about superstars when they think about the economic impact on players. But, you know, a lot of these players are not rich. I mean, they are young, they're up and coming. And yes, the minimum salary is over $500,000, but, you know, it's already been cut in half. And, you know, for some of them, there really is an economic reality that they want to get out there for the money. But most of them are doing this because they love playing baseball. And They're not used to not playing baseball in May and June, and they just want to get back and play.
David Schwartz. David, thank you so much. Really appreciate the insights.
Thanks, David.
Do you got a second for one more point?
Please.
Sure. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about playing games in empty ballparks, which I understand, but there's a whole lot of middle ground between an empty ballpark and a full ballpark. And, you know, there is no reason that I can see that over time the empty stadiums get ramped up to something that may not be full but closer to that. I mean, you put 1,000 people in Wrigley Field, and there is ample room for people to spread out. And, you know, imagine the ticket prices you could get as an owner if you had limited access to a coveted product. And so I think that, you know, this goes part of into the mistrust of the owners. I mean, they're talking about empty stadiums, and certainly in certain jurisdictions, there will be a challenge to get leadership. You know, I'm talking about governors, mayors, to allow people into stadiums. But, you know, if you could put 500 people into a Home Depot, I don't know why you couldn't put 2,500 people into a baseball park, even at the beginning, and start the process of safely allowing fans into games. So I think this whole concept of, oh, we're going to take a bath as owners because we're playing empty stadiums, there's also going to be a difference between, you know, July 1 and August 15 in terms of what people are comfortable with and where we are in the, you know, fight against this pandemic. So I think people should keep that in mind, too, that it's not going to be empty stadiums forever.
Good point, David.
Great stuff. Yeah. Thank you, David.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Be safe. That is David Schwartz.
It's interesting.
Great stuff.
Very
it's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I've got 1,000 questions just off some of those answers.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.